Welcome, and thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants will be on a listen-only mode for the duration of the call. During the question and answer period, if you would like to ask a question, press star one. I would now like to turn the call over to Lauren Gaches. You may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of a suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm Lauren Gaches with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. Today's update will feature two short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded at www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/briefings. The first presenter is Jay Crouch, a climate scientist at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the August U.S. and global climate reports and the drought monitor. The second presenter is Anthony Artusa, a seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who provides the latest El Nino and La Nina update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks for the next 3 months. If there are any additional questions not related to the topics on today's call, please follow up with me at lauren.gaches@noaa.gov. That's lauren.gaches@noaa.gov at the conclusion of today's call. Our first speaker will be Jay Crouch.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to start off speaking to slide number 2 on the slide deck you can download from our website. I did want to mention that today I will not be speaking to specifics about Hurricane Florence, but we will have a wrap-up and a summary of the event in our September report, which will be released in early October. So looking at slide number 2 and looking at the global statistics for August that were released earlier this week, the globally average temperature was 0.74 degrees Celsius above the 20th century average, and this did rank as our fifth warmest August on record and marked our 404th consecutive month with globally average temperatures above the 20th century average. While this was a warmer than average August, it has been our coolest August since 2013. Looking at land and ocean surfaces separately, the land surface temperature was 0.94 degrees Celsius. This was our sixth warmest August on record for the land, while the ocean surface temperature ranked as the fifth warmest for the month at 0.67 degrees Celsius above average. The map on the right shows how different regions of the world temperatures broke down for the month. Areas that were in the darkest shade of red were record warm for August. So some noteworthy warm temperatures located in northeastern U.S. and southeastern Canada, as well as large parts of Europe. Europe had their warmest August on record and their warmest summer on record, so a pretty stifling summer in that part of the world. We did also see above-average temperatures across most of the land of the world's land surface and ocean surfaces, with the exception of parts of Central South America, parts of Western Australia, as well as northern Canada stretching into northern Alaska. Interesting, Barrow, Alaska had their coolest August since 2006. And then a feature that we've seen for many years now, we do have this area of below average sea surface temperatures off the coast of Greenland that were still present during the month of August. Moving on to look at slide number 3 in our slide deck, looking at our year-to-date temperatures for the globe. This is our horse race graphic, so this shows our 2018 as well as our 9 warmest years on record for the globe and how temperatures have progressed through each year. So as you move from left to right, you accumulate the average temperature for each of those months. And so we can see the black line for 2018, and the end of the black line indicates the January through August average temperature for the globe, which was 0.76 degrees above average and our fourth warmest on record. And what we see moving out from that black line are a couple of simple scenarios to play out how 2018 could ultimately rank. And our most likely case is that 2018 will rank as the fourth warmest year on record for the globe, with 2015, 2016, and 2017 being warmer. So we're off those record high temperatures that we saw in 2016, but we're still very much near the top of the pack, and the four warmest years on record for the globe have all occurred in the last 4 years. Moving on to slide number 4 to look at conditions across the U.S. in August. It was a warmer than average month for the contiguous U.S. as a whole, with an average temperature of 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit above average and ultimately ranked as the 17th warmest August on record. The map on the left shows how temperatures broke down across the U.S. during the month. Large parts of the West, particularly the Southwest, and large parts of the East, particularly the Northeast, were really warm during the month. We had numerous states in the Northeast, Connecticut, Delaware, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island, that each had their warmest August on record. And we did have a large area of the country stretching from the Northern Plains through the Southern and Central Plains and into the Southeast that had near to below average conditions. So both coasts were really warm with near to below average conditions across the central U.S. Looking at precipitation for the month, it was on the wet end of the spectrum with our 20th wettest August on record, and that was 0.37 inches above the 20th century average. The map on the right shows how the conditions broke down, with much of the West being drier than average and much of the East, pretty much from the Great Plains to the East Coast, being wetter than average. We did see some record precipitation amounts across parts of the Midwest and the Northeast. And those dry conditions in the West did help many large wildfires that began earlier in the summer to continue as we move through the month of August. Moving on to slide number 5 to look at, I did want to mention contiguous U.S. conditions during the summer. It was the fourth warmest summer on record for the lower 48. And what was really noteworthy were the overnight low temperatures. Overnight temperatures were record warm for the season. And this fits into a longer-term trend that we've seen. So the map on the left shows how minimum temperatures or overnight lows compared to past across the U.S. And we see that large parts of the country were much warmer than average during the month, with some record warmth across the West and parts of the East. We did see some below average temperatures, as well as below average maximum temperatures in parts of the central U.S., and that was accompanied by above-average precipitation, and that has led to a bumper year in terms of many crops across the region. According to the USDA, the U.S. corn production is forecast to be record high, and many states, including South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas, are expected to see many crops reach record high production related to below-average daytime temperatures and above-average precipitation this summer in that part of the country. Getting back to the increase in overnight low temperatures that we've observed, overnight lows are warming at a rate that is twice as fast as afternoon highs for the June through August period. So the graph on the top right shows the increase in summer maximum temperatures, and it was showing the data back to 1895, and the bottom graphic shows the minimum temperatures or overnight lows, showing that we're seeing this increase in overnight low temperatures, which has many impacts, both on terms of energy usage and how much energy it takes to cool buildings when it doesn't cool down as much overnight, and also has impacts on horticulture as well as livestock. Moving on to slide number 6 to look at the year-to-date for the lower 48. It's been our 10th warmest year for the contiguous U.S., with a temperature of 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit above average. A similar pattern that we saw during the summer as well as the month of August, the West has been really warm. Much of the East has been warmer than average, with those below average conditions across large parts of the central U.S., particularly parts of the northern high plains being fairly cold for the year-to-date. And the graphic on the right shows how year-to-date temperatures have looked back to 1895, and a couple of things pop out. We do have that long-term warming trend, and this has been our 25th consecutive year with year-to-date temperatures being above the 20th century average. So we're off that record high mark, but again, towards the top of the pack in terms of temperatures here in the contiguous U.S. this year. Moving on to slide number 7, my last slide, I'll be talking about the U.S. drought monitor that was released this morning. About 30.9% of the lower 48 is in drought, and this is down about 3.3% since late July. We did see some improvement in the Southwest, where monsoonal precipitation helped increase precipitation totals in that part of the country. We also saw drought improve across the central to southern plains, lower Mississippi River Valley, as well as the Northeast, where beneficial precipitation fell during the last few weeks. We did see drought conditions degrade across parts of the Northwest. We saw drought expand rapidly across parts of eastern Oregon, And drought also expanded and degraded across the central to northern Rockies and into the northern plains. And outside of the contiguous U.S., we did see dry conditions expand in Puerto Rico, but we did see improvement in Hawaii with Hurricane Lane, as well as parts of the tropical storm Olivia bringing beneficial rainfall to the islands, helping to boost precipitation totals, boost stream flows, and help the state recover from drought. And with that, I will pass it off to Anthony.
Okay, thank you very much, Jake, and good morning, everyone. I'd like to continue on with slide number 8. It's labeled the sea surface temperatures and ENSO. The top left panel shows the average sea surface temperature anomalies for approximately the past month. And what this shows is that along the equatorial Pacific, for most of this past month, the temperatures have been mostly near to above normal. There have been a few isolated pockets of below normal. Predominantly, though, it's been more near to above normal. Now, once you move away from the equator, these above normal, what you see sea surface temperatures, or SSTs, still reside over the eastern Pacific, off the coast of Mexico and Southern California, and also the Gulf of Mexico. This has been important in terms of keeping an active or maintaining an active East Pacific tropical cyclone season in place during much of the summer. And also, I'd like to mention that the ENSO neutral conditions are present. ENSO is just the El Nino Southern Oscillation. Right now, we continue to have neutral conditions, but things are evolving toward a weak ENSO state or a weak El Nino state. So in terms of the ENSO forecast, you can see in the bottom left panel, you can see the red bars are indicative of the probabilities for an El Nino. And you can see that by SON, which is September, October, November, you can see that the probabilities for an El Nino exceed 50%. And they're also a bit higher now than the adjacent gray bar, which is for a neutral event. So then as you follow those seasons out in time, it looks like the red bars peak at about 65 to 70% by November, December, January, and December, January, and February, so by the late fall and winter seasons. Now, the ocean component of the El Nino certainly seems to be in place. It's the atmospheric component that seems to be a little slow in catching on, and this is what has, given us some pause as to how intense of an ENSO we should have this winter. So for right now, we are leaning toward a weak El Nino, and this means that the impacts for the U.S. Will possibly be diminished compared to what we would expect during, let's say, a moderate or strong El Nino. Okay, so moving on to slide 9, we'll look at the monthly forecast for October. The temperature is on the left and the precipitation is on the right. And we'll start off in Alaska, where just about the entire state is expected to be above normal. This is generally what our different climate models, both statistical and dynamical in nature, are showing. We also have very warm SSTs, or sea surface temperatures, off the west coast and the southern coast of Alaska, for that matter. And then for the North Slope, October is usually the peak month for seeing a delay in the onset of ice cover in sea ice. So we're playing those trends pretty strongly as well. Once you move down to the lower 48 states for temperatures, you can see we expect above normal temperatures primarily from the continental divide westward to the Pacific coast. This is related to strong historical or long-term temperature trends. Also, very good agreement between the various climate models and, in many cases, below normal soil moisture. As we move into the southeast, I'm going to skip over the central part of the lower 48 for a moment. In that area, we expect to see above normal temperatures, though, but with lower probabilities. This is where we've seen a lot more heavy rainfall. They've had a wet summer so far in much of this region. They've also had the influence of Florence. And generally speaking, we expect to see southerly anomalous flow, meaning that we hope to see an extended period of southerly flow. And then toward the middle part of the CONUS or the contiguous U.S., we've had to look at some of the most recent information, computer information, which was showing us that it looks like some of the colder air that's been setting up over western Canada may now have a way to drive southward into the central part of the CONUS. So therefore, we expect to see a trough in the mid-levels of the atmosphere help to drive this cold air southward over the central states. Now, it is a lower probability. We only have a 40% for below centered near the Corn Belt area. But nevertheless, it looks like something that can't be ignored, and it looks like it would be most likely during the first half or so of October. Moving on to the precipitation to the right, you can see the areas in green indicate where we think there will be above normal precipitation. For example, in Alaska, the climate models and also the relatively warm sea surface temperatures along the western and southern coasts favor wetter than normal conditions there. A ridge of high pressure across the Pacific Northwest is expected to bring below normal precipitation totals there. And then across the southern states, we have the beginnings of what we think will be a weak El Nino across the southern tier of the U.S. And also historical trends play a role across the northeastern U.S. and the mid-Atlantic. For parts of southern California and western Arizona, we actually get two opportunities to have this verify as above normal. One will be during the month of October. We have a very active East Pacific hurricane season in progress, and we also have relatively warm sea surface temperatures there. If the area does not get wetter than normal precipitation during October, there's another chance in December when we think the El Nino should be a bit stronger. Okay, so moving on to the next slide, which is number 10, the seasonal outlook for October, November, and December. A lot of the reasoning that I mentioned for October continues into the seasonal forecast, especially for Alaska. What you see for the lower 48 states are, to a large degree, very good agreement among various climate models, both statistical and dynamical. And also we have longer-term historical trends, temperature trends to consider. At this point, we think that the highest probabilities will be across the Four Corners region for above normal, probabilities in excess of 60%. And then a second relative maximum in the probabilities across the Northeast, perhaps up to 40%. The area of greatest uncertainty is located over the Southeast, and that's where we go for an area of EC, or equal chances, and it simply means we do not have enough information to distinguish whether above, near, or below normal temperatures are more favored than the others. Notice also the weakness, the low probabilities for above across the central part of the states of the U.S., and that is in connection with the early cold that we expect during the month of October. And then for the precipitation, we have a wet pattern overall expected for Alaska, and we should see this continue to continue during the next couple of months. It also looks like there is a trend to move some of this above farther to the south and then to the east portions of the state toward the end of the season. Again, we have a below normal precipitation expected over the Northwest. This is generally tied to upper-level ridging. And then we have our El Nino storm track. Again, I want to emphasize we think it'll be a weak one at this point across the southern and the southeastern states, and the historical trends extend the areas of above up across the mid-Atlantic region. And then finally, we'll move down to the drought outlook for the 50 states in Puerto Rico, and this is slide 11. This was just released this morning, and it's valid through the end of this year. You can see in the lower right the key where drought persists is indicated in the brown shading. Notice that's across a large portion of the West and also the Dakotas. This is where we think the drought will persist, although we are now moving into the time of the year where the western states are tending to see their rainy season. So that will need to be considered as well. In fact, if you look at the Pacific Northwest, you can see some tan and some olive green shading. The tan represents where we think the drought will remain, but improve by one category in the drought monitor. So, for example, if let's suppose there's a D2 area in the drought monitor, we think it'll improve to D1. The removal in the olive green shading is representative of where we think we will get down to D0 or no drought. So this is where we think drought will be removed. And also across much of the south central and portions of the eastern CONUS, we have a large area of a drought removal or improvement indicated for a number of different reasons. One is the expected storm track across the south. We also have the trough in October that's expected to dig south, and that'll bring some precipitation, we think, down to the southern plains and Mississippi Valley. And also they've just had a lot of precipitation in these areas recently. So I know that's kind of quite a bit of information, but I'd like to turn it over now to Lauren.
Thanks, Anthony. We'll now take specific questions from call participants. Please be sure to identify, if you can, who you would like to answer the question. Operator, please remind the call participants how they can ask the question and queue up the first question.
Absolutely. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, press star 1 from your phone, unmute your line, and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star 2. One moment while we wait for the first question. Our first question comes from Bryce Anderson. Bryce, your line is now open.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the briefing. And my question is for Anthony. Based on your last slide about the seasonal drought outlook, could you give a few more details on your prospect for that more promising scenario there in the Texas Panhandle and then up into northwestern Missouri and northeastern Kansas, please?
Sure. Yes. Hi. This is Anthony. And we do have a more optimistic scenario in that area, and it's actually due to a couple of things that we see right now. One is during the month of October. As I mentioned earlier, we think there will be a pretty persistent upper level trough that will dig down or move southward across this region. In this case, we often have Gulf moisture that comes up in advance of these troughs, and we think they will see a considerable amount of precipitation just from the trough, especially if it lasts for a couple of weeks. The question is, and this is really what a lot of the temperature forecast hinges on too, is there's an upstream feature from this trough, an upper-level ridge that's expected to increase in strength across Alaska. And this is what helps drive this this trough down through the central part of the United States, through the CONUS. And the question is, will this be a longer-lasting event, or will it simply be a transient event where it just sets up for a few days and then moves on? At this point, we don't know yet, but we do think that at least some of that relief will come from this upper trough. We also had some information from the various climate and dynamical models. This is the forecast that went with this. Also considers these as well as the precipitation outlooks all the way out to a season in advance. So he will look at, for example, the Weather Prediction Center's next 7 days precipitation, Also, CPC's week 2 and weeks 3 and 4 forecasts. So he would consider all these things. And then I guess as another consideration would be the El Nino itself. And I know we don't have as much time to go into a lot of the explanations for this, but normally with a weaker El Nino, the jet stream that moves from west to east across the southern portion of the United States is usually not as far east as it would be given a moderate or strong event. So this is why we're at least favoring some relief across the south central states, during this period. So, there are a number of indicators that are pointing to this at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then 1, your line, and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. One moment while we wait for the next question. There are no other questions in queue at this time.
Thank you so much. If there's no further questions, we'll go ahead and wrap up today's call. First, I want to thank our speakers for their time and everyone else for participating in the conference call. I'll end by reminding everyone to mark your calendar for some upcoming dates. The September U.S. Climate Highlights will be released on October 9th. The October Global Climate Highlights will be released on October 18th. And next month, in lieu of our regular monthly climate call, we'll host NOAA's Winter Outlook Media Teleconference on Thursday, October 18th at 11 a.m. Finally, an audio file of today's call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory in approximately 90 minutes. If you have any further informational needs, please email me, lauren.gacious@noaa.gov, lauren.gacious@noaa.gov, and my contact information is also available at the top of the Media Advisory. This concludes today's call. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. Leaders, please stand by.